Hey, everybody, and welcome to an utter episode of Indie Film Cafe. I'm your old pal, the Moo Cow, a.k.a. Paul A. Presenza. And today we are joined by...
Jonathan Moody, or...
And Sarah Adkins.
Yay! So, Sarah, this is not your first time here on Indie Film Cafe, is it?
It is actually, I think, my first time at Indie Film Cafe.
No, it's your second. It's your second.
Is it? Yeah, have we done one remember, of any film?
Yeah, you did It Waits with me and
okay. Well, you do so many podcasts, I wasn't sure which one I was on. I was like, I know
you've that,
done
did you?
More film lovers. I'm like, have I been on this one? We did do It's Waits, so this would be my second go around.
I think
here.
You did that with Tris Marie, if I'm correct.
So. I did.
Yeah.
Movie now.
Well, this is not It Waits, but you could say that this movie could be titled It Stinks.
I agree with that.
Okay, we're gonna have a fun time then, because I'm kind of in a disagreement with it.
We are doing the 1970/1966 classic Al Adamson movie Horror of the Blood Monsters, aka Vampire Men of the Lost Planet, Creatures of the Prehistoric Planet, Creatures of the Red Planet, Space Invasion of the Lost Planet, etc., 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 etc.
Come into the cave of the Bat Demons. They are waiting for you. They are longing for your blood. And they hope you'll drop in to join them in Horror of the Blood Monsters.
That is
I like the one
awesome.
That says prehistoric, ones. I like those better title.
And this is one of those weird, wacky stinkers that I've kind of been saving because it's kind of a party film, and it's a lot more fun to sort of see it in person with a bunch of people, but I couldn't hold on to it forever, and it was just time,
I'm thinking this is a good movie if you were doing like an acid trip or just really stoned, because there were a lot of curveballs where you're like, wait, what's happening? Wait, where did this come from?
Right.
I don't understand.
If you like literally are checking your phone and you look up and you're in a whole nother like movie.
Seriously.
Oh yeah. Something stupid happens every 5 seconds. And I love movies like that.
Exactly.
It's total cheese. It's total cheese.
All right. So with that in mind, we will come back after listening to some mood music. Okay, and we are back. So I want to hear what you guys have to say, your initial thoughts on Horror of the Blood Monsters, aka Vampire Men of the Lost Planet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's let the ladies go first.
All right, Miss Sarah, what do you got to say about this flick?
So I went into it thinking maybe it was a vampire movie because it's blood monsters, and when it first comes on, you see vampires. But
sort of.
I didn't understand what they were saying in the beginning, because after the first like 5 minutes of the intro, it completely changed to space instead of vampires. And I'm like, wait, are we watching the same movie? I don't see, where do the vampires come into play? And then eventually like it comes back around, but I did have to, at the end of the movie, go back to the beginning and rewatch it, because I'm like, wait, they just don't make sense together. And then I listened to what they were saying in the beginning. I was like, okay, that correlates, but it still doesn't, the timeline still didn't make sense to me. But no, this movie was a trip, and I kept looking at it going, are those dinosaurs? Wait, caveman? Wait, snakes on the, what's happening? I don't know what's happening.
It's a vampire movie. It's a caveman
movie. It's a caveman movie. It's a space
movie. It's a
movie.
Science fiction
movie.
It's a
love movie, because for some reason they had to show like the people at the headquarters like having this weird intercourse scene where they have these doodads on their heads and this machine where they don't actually like do it, but it's like what is it, the Demolition Man, where it's a simulation. I felt like that, where it's like, okay, so all future sex isn't real sex. They all just have machines hooked to their brains that send them off. But
they even say at one point, the guy even is talking to the girl about how You know, it's not as good as, you know, the how we used to do it. And right. I'm like, they just do it that way.
I thought it was hilarious because that scene, for one thing, those scenes had nothing to do with the movie and did not need to be in the movie and were just absolute just filler and waste. It wasn't even anything for like views because they don't show nudity or anything. So I'm like, so what's the point of putting that in there just to show that while these people are lost on a planet, their friends obviously don't care and are just, you know, screwing around. But the fact that he even said to her, he's like, I know you didn't really get yours, but next time I'll turn it up more. I'll be right back. And then, okay. And she lays there while he does his job. And then he comes back, who knows how long later, shows her the colors and then rocks her world for no reason. So I'm just like, okay.
It's so weird. It's like they took somewhere between five to a dozen random scenes and tossed them in a blender and hit puree. Right.
It's like they give so many different people, you write this part, we're not going to communicate at all. We're just going to mix it together.
I was saying like there was like maybe three or four different movies. And like, that's what was going through my mind. Yes. Like that was what happened in my mind. And then guess what? I come to find out one of them by doing research, one of them actually is a completely different movie that they threw in there.
Not just one.
That made sense.
There are several. Okay, so let me backtrack a little bit and get a little bit into the background for this bizarre, crazy, wackadoodle Al Adamson movie. So first of all, Al Adamson is yet another one of those great, stinky, cheapo directors. He kind of comes to the scene after Ray Dennis Steckler in sort of mid-60s, but sort of before like Ray Don Clark and some of those other guys who come in the 70s. He's kind of right there in the mid to late 60s and sort of does his thing. So he does things like Psycho A Go-Go, Satan Sadist, and most famously is the really, really terrible Dracula versus Frankenstein.
Here's the thing. I was looking at his credits and I realized he did a movie called Dr. Dracula. Now, yes. That just blew my mind. I'm like, I need to see that movie somewhere. I bet it's on YouTube somewhere.
You need to see all the Al Adams movies because they are just crazy. He's considered the hippie Ed Wood.
Oh my God, that sounds awesome. I want to see that.
Oh yeah.
And also, I wanted to point this out before I forget. You mentioned Ray Dennis Steckler, and this movie did have that Rat Finka Boo Boo feel. That, yes. So if people know us and have listened to our show, the first season we did a movie called Rat Finka Boo Boo. Well, Paul picked it, of course, and it was done by Ray Dennis Steckler, and it was two movies. One was like this, I don't know, like crime movie, you know, where it was like these people beating up people, but whatever. Then it turns into like a superhero Batman from the 60s movie.
The cheapest possible one.
Well, yeah, cheaper than those, you know, or whatever, where they're fighting those guys, but it almost didn't make any sense. That's what this movie felt like. It felt like they took like so many ideas and then they just said, you know.
It didn't make sense. It just didn't make sense.
Right. Well, Al Adamson is contemporaneous with, you know, Ray Dennis Steckler, with Jerry Warren, with a whole bunch of folks from that era, which is why, you know, I've always told you I wanted to do that web thing, Stinkopedia, where I get to talk about them, because they use a lot of the same people, a lot of the same actors, a lot of the same stuff end up going back and forth. So, you know, I'll get into that as we come to it. So Al Adamson has just a whole bunch of stuff. He was a writer as well, and he also produced. And he created, along with his buddy Samuel Sherman, they created their own production company, Independent International Pictures, IIP. So he sort of like a grindhouse, 60s, 70s grindhouse kind of outfit that was making all these movies, because he wasn't just doing horror films. He also did a bunch of biker movies and a bunch of hippie movies and all kinds of weird stuff.
Were they modeled? Do you know if they were modeled after American International Pictures?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. That's the same kind of group.
Yeah. Same kind of groups. Cause that's, it's what it felt like, even the logo and everything.
Sure. They are all, you know, looking at people like Roger Corman and saying, we want to do what they're doing, except we want to make it what we want to make it. You know what I mean?
No. Totally.
So he hooked up with Sam Sherman, who is one of the main producer for this particular film. And some of the people that he worked with, things like Laszlo Kozvacs and Vilmos Siegmans, who was the DP in this film,
yeah,
are people that worked with Ray Dennis Deckler and others and on to have great careers.
Vilmos worked with Ray Dennis Deckler? Absolutely. I did not know that.
Yes.
That's amazing. Well,
they were buddies. They were buddies when before they came over to the United States. So when one got work with one director, they ended up going with other ones. And that's how they made their careers, is working with these independent, you know, directors and producers before they ended up going into Hollywood and getting Academy Awards.
Vilmos did, if I'm correct, he also did Close Encounters. Mm-hmm. Is that right? So he done Close Encounter, he did Jersey Girl, which I'm sure he keeps that off his list of movies for his thing. But
there you go.
He's
yeah.
All so, these amazing movies. Yeah.
Pretty darn amazing. So, yeah. So this particular film, okay. So there's a weird sort of time thing going on here. Apparently, Al Adamson saw a movie called, and I'm going to butcher the name because it's in Tagalog, which is Filipino, Kahawaag Bato, which is translated into English as Tagani, which was a movie from 1956. It was a weird, bad Filipino fantasy caveman movie. That's about 40 minutes of the film. He liked it. So when he saw it, I guess when he was younger, and he liked it so much that when it became available, he bought the rights to it and said, I think I can take some of this movie and shoot another movie and build something around it. So that's what he did. So he has the 1956 footage. Then in 1966, he's shooting all of the space stuff where he gets John Carradine and all that. And then because it's bad and he knows it, he kind of puts it on the shelf for a while. And here comes 1969, and he says, you know, maybe if we turn this into a vampire movie, we can actually stick this out into the drive-in crowd, and they're not going to care. They're a bunch of dumbass teenagers getting high and necking. They're not going to even pay attention. Right. So he shoots all of the opening vampire stuff around 1969, and he finally releases it in 1970.
I'm the vampire. I have existed for centuries in legend, in fantasy, in men's minds, and some say in a reality.
And because some of the footage that, like the Filipino footage, is black and white, and other footage that he basically is stealing from things like 1 million years BC, Unknown Island, The Wizard of Mars, he's taking a lot of stuff from a lot of films.
Wait. So he was actually literally stealing it, like he didn't own the footage at all, but he
oh no I mean, things were a little bit different back then. Maybe you could do it. I mean, a lot of films did it.
So why they kept putting the colors on there, I assume. Exactly. I was assuming that was to hide the bad props and costumes.
Well, it was to hide the transition, so whenever they were transitioning from the color film to the black and white, they thought that was too bad to ignore. So they're like, okay, we'll come up with spectrum X and this chromatic radiation, and it's always blue or it's red or it's green, and that'll cover it up and everything will look the same muddy color.
You knew that was to cover up something. Like, you could tell. You're like, why would they do this unless it's to cover up like bad stuff in the movie?
Because it looks so fucking terrible that it had to be like some kind of, you know, thing, right?
Well,
like,
there was one scene where one of the cavemen rolled down the hill after getting shot, and I swear I saw a little bit of his tidy whities poke out from underneath his beard. And I was just like, oh boy.
Well, plus, you got to figure, you know, 60s, you know, back then everything was garish colors everywhere anyway. You know,
I think I saw his zipper on one of the outfits too. I was like, they didn't do a good job concealing this.
Colors everywhere. The hippie kids are going to love it. That's what they figured.
I'm not going to lie. It was kind of cool. I liked it. I did not mind the color transition. I thought, like, okay, this is different. You know, like I was into it. I mean,
remember Jonathan.
You knew it was there for a reason.
Right. Remember, Jonathan, Ray Dennis Deckler did a very similar thing with Ratfinger Boo Boo. Remember, it changed colors several times.
We got to do that as a Patreon only, because yes, I have not seen that movie in forever. Yes. Not since you showed it to me.
I love that movie.
I remember Jin loving it, and I actually didn't hate it.
Everybody so. I've showed it to loves it. Plus a special appearance by Kogar the Gorilla.
Yeah, there you go.
So there's a lot of stuff that parallels Ray Dennis Steckler and frankly other filmmakers at the time. And it's not that different than, say, other people like Jerry Warren. Now, Jerry Warren, he was buying up things like crappy Mexican movies that either never got released in the United States or were unfinished, or, you know, people were just selling, and he would do the same thing. He would buy up, these films, get the rights, the American rights, and then he would just pull stuff out that he wanted to use, and then, you know, shoot maybe 20 minutes of his own new stuff, shove it in there, make a bare attempt to connect the two, and just toss it out there because it was the drive-in theater times. And, you know, just like now where you've got all of these online companies who are looking for any kind of content whatsoever, back then it was the drive-ins, and they were looking for anything they could do to get the kids in there. Mm-hmm. So you could make all kinds of crap like this, and you didn't have to worry about it never getting through, you know, the regular distributors to the theaters, because they were never going to see that anyway. This was strictly drive-in stuff. You know what I mean?
I agree.
That's kind of the pedigree where this is coming from. And then the other thing I wanted to quickly point out is, if you recall the opening weird vampire thing with the terrible, terrible fake teeth. It was so bad. Well, the one older vampire, that's actually Al Adamson himself. So he's as a vampire, because why wouldn't you be?
I mean, if you're going to make a movie and you know it's going to be shit, fucking put yourself in it.
Right. So, not to put you on the spot, Sarah, but do you think there's any way in heaven or hell that you could briefly talk about what the plot is for the film? Like, what happens?
So, what I gathered, which was very confusing, the plot seemed to be that Earth was overrun by vampires because a space team had visited this planet before and then caught this vampire virus and brought it back to Earth. But then they were saying nobody's been able to go back there and survive and come back, which was kind of confusing. But then they went into space and they found the planet and they showed you the planet. And it really was just, we arrived at this planet. We didn't really mean to. We kind of got lost. We're getting sick from the radiation, so a lot of us are probably going to die or we're infected, but we need to fix the ship. But instead of fixing the ship, we're going to explore, and we're going to see dinosaurs and giant lizards, and then we're going to see cavemen fighting with weird snakes on their shoulders, and then we're going to see this girl running from people trying to murder her, so we're going to shoot them and interrupt everything, even though we probably should stay in the background and leave it all alone. We're going to jump into this world and just totally be like, no, we're here, we're from space, we have a gun, we're going to interrupt your whole flow of life and everything. And realize that there's two tribes, one of them is vampire and one of them is peaceful, and they try to help this lady, and of course she falls in love with one of the astronauts, of course, for like no reason. And then
because Willie's so cute,
right? And then all of a sudden, though, it's like we got what we needed to fix the ship. Some of us didn't make it for some reason. There's these weird relationship scenes throughout the whole thing because people are just hooking up left and right, and then and then right at the end, it's like, well, we got what we needed to fix the ship. You just stand back and wait. We're not taking you with us, and nobody's staying here with you. I'm going to drop this gun before I go up, and hopefully that doesn't ruin your whole world because you don't know the technology, because I never saw him pick it back up and put it back in the spaceship, and that bugged me because I'm like, just dropped this futuristic weapon on their planet, and they have spears and caveman. And then that's it. They fly off, and it was very confusing.
That was probably one of the best, quickest explanations that we've ever had on our show.
Even that, as good as that was, doesn't even scratch the surface because there's so much weird shit going on.
Oh, yeah, no, that was just a brief, you know.
The plot is just amazing. Now, the writer, the person who did the screenplay, is named Sue McNair, and it may not shock you to find out that this is her one and only credit. This is her one and only screenplay, and it is bonkers, crazy, bizarre, terrible, and there are plot holes left and right.
I mean, okay, to give her credit, you know, this might be her first screenplay, but I guarantee you she was asked to do this and try to make it make sense.
She tried to make the best of a bad situation.
Right. Oh, so I like after that, I would be like, no, I don't want to work with you, Al. Like, I'm done.
I was just really confused because in the beginning they were saying, like, because I had to go back and re-listen to it. They made a comment that the vampires were on Earth because somebody had previously brought it back from that planet, but then they mentioned that nobody had been able to go back to that planet and survive to come back. So I'm just like, the timeline to me was confusing because you obviously saw the astronauts find that planet, but they found it on accident, which meant that they weren't trying to go there.
Right.
Then you saw them leave the planet. So obviously they survived to leave. So I'm like, the opening then kind of lost its sense with me on timeline because I'm like, okay, so was that before or after these people went to this planet?
And then two quick points before I forget them, because they're just perfect examples of how terrible the script is. Number one, if you recall that whole thing you're talking about the people being there beforehand, remember, they found a quote unquote artifact, which was actually just an ammo box, a cheap metal ammo box, which is supposed to be whatever the hell the first group would have buried there and probably would have been the explanation, you know, for what's going on.
Right.
It just vanishes. It's never mentioned again. You know, so whatever
came there and dropped that probably brought the disease maybe back.
It could be anything. They just ignore it from there on out. It's a perfect example. And, you know, so there's an example of a huge, huge plot hole. And then the other thing about the chromatic radiation, you know, it's not harming them till towards the very last 15 minutes. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, I don't feel so good.
Right.
And then when they get back, crotchety old freaking John Carradine's like, well, it shouldn't really hurt humans. It's not really going to bother us. But we have to leave in the next 5 minutes or we're all going to die. And I'm like, dude, you just told us it's not going to harm us.
They kept going back and forth with the illness. It only came up when it needed to, you know, and all that. So that was kind of confusing. But I loved how, go back and get those like oil drums. I'm like, you seem to have been pretty far away from the ship, but for some reason it's going to take you 5 minutes to get there and back. I'm like, they kept going back and forth from the caveman to the ship. I'm like, I feel like that would have taken you hours to travel. You know, instead of 5 minutes.
If you even knew where the hell you were going.
Right, because it looked like he was confused to where he was going, because then he saw the dinosaurs, those horrible T-Rexes. I don't know what they were doing.
Those were people in costumes.
Yes.
Right.
And then it didn't even show him reaching the ship. It just showed him coming back with the drums. And you're just like, so you're telling me he got there and the doctor didn't ask why he needed them or any questions or talk to him about anything? He just grabbed them and left?
Well, and the other thing that annoyed me, when to go back to what Paul was saying about like the whole people on the ship, that all of a sudden like the radiation, I guess, didn't like it bother them, and they were gonna die if they stayed on the planet, but they weren't gonna die. That they were safe if they went into another atmosphere.
Right, so all of a sudden they flew away and they're cured. Like, I didn't give them back.
Yeah, like, makes no sense whatsoever. And it was how he explained it, like, because they asked him the question, like, you know, is are we going to be, aren't we going to not be okay? And they're like, oh, you'll be fine.
even though your buddy over there we think is dead. We never really trusted if he survived. We just brought his body back on the ship and just didn't even ask about it.
Lenore would go crazy with the science in this movie.
Well, I mean, just from the very beginning, you know, they blast off and everything looks cheap and awful and terrible, by the way. Jesus. So everything looks
that
bad.
Rocket, you can tell it's like something on a screen.
So bad. So bad. So because the plot needs something bad to happen to them, you know, they a solar flare, even though they're not near a sun, hits them. And they all get knocked out. Now, you know, two scenes later, they all talk about, well, we're going to get back in our chairs where they all buckle up. I'm like, so you're telling me the solar flare hit when nobody was sitting in their chair buckled up at the same time? How convenient. So ridiculous.
It was very ridiculous. It made no sense. And it was just very slow in the beginning when those two people are sitting there just going, can you read me? Can you hear me? can you hear me? Can you hear me? I think we lost you. I'm like, oh my God, how long is this going to go?
Go to the backup.
Go to
the backup. Well, let's do a countdown. Then we can go to the backup. And then they would count down, and then you'd have to sit through the whole thing.
It was taking forever. It was so drawn out.
I was
45 minutes into this film, and I've just watched these two people talk back and forth of, are you there? Are you there? Yeah. And then later, they're going to have weird space sex for some reason.
Well, so I was having this, I was watching this comedian today talk about how we're on our cell phones these days, and if we lose, we lose service with somebody, we're like, who cares? But back in the day, when you're on the phone with somebody, you'd be like, are you there? Hello? Are you still there? Hello? You know, right? And that's what it reminded me of, like them going, hello? Are you there? Is something going on? Okay, you there? And I'm like, obviously not.
Well, they were so concerned at first, like if we don't reach them and we don't get them back, they're going to die. They're going to be lost forever. And then as soon as they're like, oh, well, we crashed on a planet. Like, okay, we don't care about you anymore. We're going to go get laid. I'm like, okay.
And let's give it up to Al Adamson, who, along with Jerry Warren and all the other stinky movie directors of that era, would take a relatively crappy foreign film, which is already bad, and make it worse. Make it absolutely worse. And all the stuff they shot was crappy and stupid and made no sense.
And like
if you were intoxicated, though, this movie might be a little bomb. But completely, I mean, wouldn't say I was completely sober when I watched it, but it still was not that great.
Unlike Woody Allen, who did What's Up, Tiger Lily,
right,
and actually made a good movie or whatever. But he's a Hollywood director who's pretty good at comedy. These guys are terrible B-movie people I've never seen it. This is my first Al Adamson movie. So,
oh, my God.
And I know, Paul, because I've heard the name Al Adamson. I'm guessing it's out of your mouth. I don't remember where you heard it from. So I can only imagine that you've talked about him before.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's one of the many that I've wanted to do. And it's kind of very much like Ed Wood. He ends up having a very sad ending in 1992. Five or 96, he ended up getting murdered he had a live-in roommate who was his handyman. He would pay people to do stuff, and he actually married Regina Carroll, his leading lady in a lot of his films. She's not in this particular film, but and then they did some real estate stuff and etc., and he was gonna try and come back and do more films, but for whatever reason, the guy that he hired and was living there just killed him and buried him under his own floor. And
oh, Jesus.
Yeah, they got him. So I think somebody tried to make a documentary about it, but I always thought that would make for a very interesting biopic as well. I mean, they've done Ed Wood. I'd love to see Al Adamson done this. And I can tell you one other thing. They released like this massive, I think it was like 35 movie set that you can watch all of Al Adamson's movies, and it's pretty
on
awesome.
On DVD or Blu-ray or something?
On DVD. It's probably on Blu-ray too.
Well, that's awesome. As far as them doing a biopic, unfortunately, I don't think enough people know who he is. Ed Wood got famous for the Golden Turkey Awards and stuff, so this guy kind of fell through the cracks, unfortunately. So I feel like if they were going to do something like a biopic or whatever, it would have to be something where it was a fictional character who's similar to what happened to him, which, I mean, one day, who knows?
Kind of like The Creep Behind the Camera. What about the Creeping Terror movie and that director? And it was very, very similar. It wasn't 100% exactly what happened.
Okay.
I could see something like that. But
that would be cool.
For a few minutes, I should talk a little bit about the cast. The amazing cast. Amazing cast. So
I actually like the actors. I'm not gonna lie. Most of them were like, they weren't terrible.
They weren't terrible.
And that's kind of how the acting was back then too, though. You know, like that seemed very in its time.
Right. So the main guy, I guess you could say, is John Carradine, who's playing Dr. Reining. And
was
John,
he the main guy though? Like he's in
yeah. It's hard to say.
I don't think there really was a main guy.
He's the guy that gets to spout all the pseudo scientific nonsense that sounds like it means something even though it doesn't.
We've experienced a solar disturbance. It has the same effects as if it came from our own sun.
Shorting TV and communication relay.
Created a magnetic disturbance that disoriented the ship.
Right. I do agree. If there was a main guy, he would have been at the focus.
And, you know, he's like the main scientist. And I'm telling you what, man, he's like this old crotchety, sour ass guy. He just grumbles at everything. He's somebody who needs roughage in the worst, worst way. And he's just miserable and he snaps at everybody. And he's just very unpleasant. And that is typical John Carradine. He just always loves to play these wacky old coots. He was a wacky old coot. He was in a billion, million, trillion movies, and his career goes all the way back to the 30s and 40s. He's a guy that won an Academy Award, you know, typical of your older washed up movie stars as they age out and are no longer able to play in Hollywood. They end up falling prey to a lot of these, you know, lower rank, lower hanging fruit directors who are going to use them in pretty much anything. And very much like you see in other actors, certain actors today, you know, your Nick Cages and your Michael Caines and people like that, never met a role he was going to turn down. So he was in everything and he pretty much approached it the same way. So this is vintage John Carradine for you, except if anything, he got a lot more dialogue in because he was the kind of person who could still at his age memorize lots and lots, pages and pages of this crappy dialogue, which is all just pseudo babble, and was able to spout it out and still look pretty good. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because definitely was older and frail. And you notice his character, quote unquote, had a cardiac arrest, which means he had to stay in the space ship, which is basically them saying, okay, we don't you actually, you know, exert yourself, just stay on stage and don't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So there's John Carradine for you. Then I guess the next guy was going to be Dr. / Colonel Manning. He gets called both because of course there's no consistency, and that is Robert Dix. And Robert Dix is one of those, in fact, he's one of the group of actors in this group that are Al Adamson's veterans. You know, he plays in all his movies. So he was in Forbidden Planet. That was his most famous thing, but he was in Satan Sadist and Hell's Bloody Devils and a whole bunch of Al Adamson movies.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of his things. Then there is Vicky Vellante, who plays Valerie, the chick with the short hair who has the weird psychotronic sex thing, right. Electronic sex thing.
The unsatisfied woman in the film.
Yes, 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 yes. She's also in a whole bunch of Al Adamson movies, Five Bloody Graves, Brain of Blood, Angels, Wild Women. I have just about all these movies. They're all wackadoodle movies. You got to see them. They're perfect. They really are great. Willie, wonderful, wonderful Willie, who falls in love with the quote-unquote native girl, is played by Joey Benson. And again, typical Al Adamson character actor. He was in Psycho A Go-Go, Blood of Ghastly Horror, Gallery of Horrors, all kinds of Al Adamson movies. Leanne, who plays the girl that he falls for, the girl, I guess, who's supposed to be similar to the Filipino cave girl, even though she doesn't look anything like them.
I was like, wait, I was like,
is that supposed to be her?
Right. Like, I was like, okay, like it didn't look so bad that it was like, oh my God, you can, you know what I mean? But I was like going,
they were both tall. They both had long, dark hair. And that's about it.
That was about it.
I mean, I guess I didn't notice that it was two different people. So I guess they did what they wanted to do there. But now that you say something about it, now that I know it was two different movies, I'm like, oh, that made sense.
Yeah, the color.
That's why they looked funny.
The color hid that, because if it had been black and white in color, you would have seen, yeah, that person's not even Asian.
It would have been like light and, night and day.
Yeah. Jennifer Bishop is not even Asian, so it wouldn't even come close. But
right. She
was in a bunch of stuff too. She was in Blood and Dracula's Castle. She was in Bigfoot, the 1970 version, which is really bad. And she was in a movie called the Maltese Bippy, which I have not seen, but wow, what a great title. I have to get that.
Wait, so she had done something else that I like, a newer movie. That I was like going, oh, okay.
Yeah, she's floated in and out of stuff.
Oh, yeah, there was Mako, the Jaws of Death.
Jaws of Death.
And yeah. I'd heard of that movie, for a long time.
So 70s Jaws ripoff.
She doesn't have a death on her on IMDb, so I'm hoping she's still alive and still kicking through all this stuff. She was to me, honestly, she was sort of the heart and soul of the movie, because right. like if she weren't there, I wouldn't give a crap about any of the people, you know. But you. Since she was there, it was her and Willie and Willie. I was just like, really, of all the names for all the astronauts and stuff,
right?
They have Willie, like,
I know.
Right. And then when he does fall and collapse, she's like, "Oh no, Willie!" And I'm like, I can't help but laugh because it just sounds bad.
I know.
Like, I know. He's like your typical comic relief character,
right?
And she falls in love with him over like.
But they have this deep conversation though, where it's like, "I want you to stay," and he's like, "I can't stay." And you can see it in her face. I've had that look before of just total like, "I'm very sad and very mad at you right now because you're not choosing me." And
right.
then he keels over and just kind of dies. And then she.
Well, she thought he died, you know, right. which I thought but he died. I was like, damn.
They never really answered that. They just picked him up and took him away.
He could have said, "Why do you want to even stay in this hellhole? Why don't you come back with me to Earth?"
Right. That's what I was thinking too. I was like, why didn't he just take her with them? Because then they could have done some research on the planet. You know, maybe they could have even found a cure for whatever was happening with
right
her,
now. Now it doesn't even get mentioned, doesn't even
no, but instead, says she it. Gets to stand a few feet back from the spaceship, watching them go up, just staring at it, like, okay, y'all just came here, started shit, and left.
All I right. guess I'll just stand here and watch,
right? Yeah,
I just love how okay. Another thing I'd never pointed out before that I just remembered is that apparently, okay, these are cave vampires, these are. Whatever, right?
I guess they're in the sunlight, so I don't get the whole vampire thing.
Right.
The sneak thing on the arm, it happened, and then it wasn't really talked about, and then it just disappeared.
Right. So these are supposedly, because I guess they have fangs, but they look like more like saber-tooth.
They look like toothpicks.
Yeah, they're long like fucking... Saber-tooth. Yeah, saber-tooth. So, you know, and they don't really drink blood or anything, but I mean, I don't... Whatever they are, they can be killed by gun, like, bullets. Right. I'm like, what is going on here?
Sticks and rocks and clubs.
They got killed by anything. So it's like they never really called that. Like the beginning, they talked about vampires and they obviously left the holes in the neck. But yet the vampires on the planet were not vampires. They were blood-sucking monsters, but different fangs and were more prehistoric saber-toothed.
I guess they're trying to say that the one came from the other, and yet the vampires that you see at the beginning don't have the stupid snake on their shoulders.
Right, they're totally different. But then the snake on the shoulders, like I said, they disappeared. Even when they showed the vampire came in later, I was looking, I could not see a single snake on their shoulder. Like, and the leotards changed too, so I'm like, maybe that's why when you're saying there's more than one movie, I'm like, well, maybe the leopard print leotard snake people was one movie, and then the vampire saber-tooth caveman people were from another movie.
I wouldn't be surprised at this rate.
And I absolutely love it, because Al Adamson had to get the rights to this film, and it's a crappy terrible film in and of itself.
But see,
you know what I mean?
He probably thought this was a great movie.
Sure.
You know, and like, this reminds me, because you know bad movies, Paul. You know.
Oh, yeah.
You pick some stinkers or whatever. But this would be like if you wanted a stinker, you know, because he was excited because he thought it was a good movie. You'd be excited because this is a bad movie. And you're like, let's get the rights to this, Jonathan, and we can go and make our own prehistoric movie. And I would say no. Now, I would say, Paul, what we could do is you could create a division of Sick Flick Productions and make your own stinky, you know, movies and everything. And I will support that 100%.
Yay.
But I will not, like, I will not have Sick Flick Productions use their, you know, use the money to,
one of these days. I'm glad Al Adamson did. So
I am too.
Just to round up the last of the cast, I also wanted to mention Linda, who is the chicky poo of the captain, is played by Britt Semond.
The blonde chick, right?
The blonde chick. She's a Danish actress who wasn't in very much. In fact, I think this was her only feature, but she did show up on a couple episodes of like I Dream of Jeannie and Run for Your Life and a couple of other TV shows.
Okay. That's
really about it. And then Steve Bryce is he's the guy who's the plays the captain.
Captain.
And he's another guy. He's just basically been on some TV shows. He was in Ironside, An Emergency, Night Gallery, Kolchak, Space, Police Story, and that's really about it. This is, yeah, I think, his only thing too. So those are the cast, and it's just nuts.
I'm telling you, the cast was probably the best part of the movie. You know, the cast of like the real movie, you know, right, or whatever.
Well,
like,
yeah, the Filipino movie was real space too.
The space movie cast was.
I just don't know any of the actors there.
Right.
I bet our friend Andrew Leavold could probably tell us, because
he's a Filipino guy, right?
Yeah, like, there was a huge industry for Filipino films that were getting pumped out back then.
Where this was Wang Wang?
One of the crowdier ones. I know. This is a few years before Wang Wang, but
oh yeah, because that was 1950s that the other movie was made.
This was 56. Now the hallmarks of wackadoodle crazy Filipino movies is in there. So you notice there's at least two tiny people in there. There's the one old guy who gets trampled at one point. I felt bad for him, with the long hair and the beard. And then there's another one with the bow and arrow who's like hopping around going, Tibetan, Tibetan, and shooting them. He's like, shoot the shit of the fat guy.
The biggest one there.
Yes.
Weird. They had the small guy shoot like the big over plus size guy. And that's the one that when he shot him, he rolled down the hill. I saw his tidy whities.
And you could tell they were evil.
The blonde astronaut had go-go boots. Those are space-issued go-go boots.
And ascots. They all wore ascots.
Right. Because that's a space uniform back then.
But you could tell that the vampire or the people, the whatever the hell they were called, they were evil because they all went, rah, rah, rah.
What were they called?
Oh, the background noise of the cave people dying, where they were just like,
Tubaton.
Tubaton.
And as our cult of vampires spreads out, only knowledge learned from studying the original Tibetan vampires can save the planet Earth from bloody ruin.
Right, Tibetan. So now, the Tibetan are not the only weird, evil, crazy race on this planet, besides the other folks.
Oh, the crab people.
You've got, these lobster people that come up out of nowhere, and I kept thinking, crab people, crab people, taste like crab, looks like people. That blew me away. And you've got these weird bat people on strings who are flying around.
That's where the vampire thing, like, I thought that's what they turn into.
I thought it was going to tie into it, but
that's a whole different group of wackadoodle characters.
What? I thought that was the same cave people. I thought that was the Tibetans.
Nope. They guarded the cave of the firewater crap.
Which I don't even remember what the whole firewater thing was about. All I know is every time they mentioned fire, she would freak out, and then something about firewater that was going to fix the ship.
Right. Firewater. And then all kinds of weird critters. So we've got dinosaur costumes. We've got stuff liberally stolen from other movies. We already talked about 1 million years BC, that famous.
I think the mammoth was an elephant where they just put a costume on.
They put carpet. They covered
and I think
it with
they
carpet.
Found an alligator and just taped a fin to it. It was hilarious.
Yeah, no, that's classic 1 million years BC. They took an iguana. They put some stuff on it. If you remember, Jonathan, that's the exact same scene that was in Robot Monster. It's also in Mole People and like a million other cheap, crappy prehistoric theme movies of the era. That's like real popular.
Just
all kinds of wackadoodle things going on. And
when I saw the brontosaurus, I was like, well, of course, it's a vampire planet. They got to have the dinosaur with the longest necks.
Right. Just so weird and strange. And sometimes they would speak English, and other times they're going raw, like that's how they would communicate.
They had to microchip her and do it, like damage her brain so they can understand her language.
Experimental surgery on
the man. I understand her flashback, them speaking English, because she's explaining it. But then when she went to meet up with them and they all spoke English, I'm like, wait, they wouldn't be speaking English because you have the thing in your head, they don't. So that did kind of throw me off.
Yeah. It was so many inconsistencies. The plot is just awful. You know, the sets. Oh my God, the freaking sets for the rocket ship, cardboard and flashing lights. It was just
like it was tied to a string and they just pulled it up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. And the rocket was definitely a model.
Somebody's four-year-old made it at home and they were very proud of it.
Yes, they were.
Yeah,
yes, they were. It was just bad.
It was terrible. But then again, I kind of expected it out of those movies, you know? Like, yeah. I mean.
And for a second, let's talk about the two space control people, I guess, back at Cape Canaveral, whatever the hell they are. The ones who end up hooking up and using this weird futuristic sex machine. Now, this is weird. Not only do they talk about it, but that you follow them into their room where they're doing it, which is really basically they're under the covers making out. That's really all that's going on.
That's all they're doing.
And they have these electrode things on. But the machine, quote unquote, it's fucking huge. It's like the size of two couches with all these blinky lights, and it's all going roll, roll, roll. Like,
so really, annoying.
Really, like, you're gonna have that in your room? Is that's gonna set the mood for you?
Right. And that does it for you.
And on top of that, after she's done, what annoys me is she never takes the thing off or anything. She leaves the thing on.
I assume she did that because, like he said, I'm sorry that it was so short and you didn't really get to finish. So I assumed she probably laid there and left it on because she was just going to finish without him.
Might as well. What does she even need him for?
Right? She really? And then he just comes back and she's still laying there after who knows how long. She's still just laying there wearing it. Going, are we ready now?
Funny.
Oh, show me these colors. Tell me what the colors are about and then just not talk about it again.
It's funny. I do another one called Sexploitation Sleazecast, and the number of movies that I have from this period, 60s and 70s, there's a lot of weird futuristic sex stuff that happens where they sort of assume that in the future, it'll all be technological and you don't have to actually have sex in order to have sex. So you have things like the Orgasmatron, or, you know, the Woody Allen movie Sleeper, where they have the orb and just all kinds of weird shit.
Yeah, but to me, honestly, that's just, what's the point? Like,
it's the future. It's virtual reality at that point.
It's not even virtual reality, because you're still making out with the person. So it's like reality mixed with virtual reality, and that's boring to me. Like, it's like, I mean, I could do this to myself, and apparently she also did it to herself afterwards, is what you're saying. You know?
I think so. Like, I mean, as a woman, I think that's what she was doing. I was waiting for her hand just to go under the cover.
I mean, well, no, because she doesn't. But
apparently,
need
with
to.
The machine, you don't need that.
I know, you don't need to. So you just turn it up. You just turn up the volume.
You just sit
or
there with one, and you don't know what to do with it. It just, it's there.
Now, I have some movies that where they really do go there, and it is more sort of X-rated. That's the Sexploitation Sleazecast version. That's the one I'm going to torment poor Rebecca with. So yeah, it interests me because, again, it's that time period, 60s and 70s, where. Yeah. It's just a thing now, because that's when the sexual mores of the country were loosening up and you were getting into pornographic films, which before that were illegal and blah, 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 blah. So if you listen to Sexploitation Sleazecast podcast, I go over the history of all that and how the laws changed and everything and how it impacted cinema, especially underground cinema in the 60s and 70s. But it's just an interesting tie over from the one podcast to the other. I thought I'd throw
well,
out there.
Like, normally you would put that scene in there to liven up a boring movie by putting in a little bit of nudity, but it seemed like they wanted to, but they probably couldn't. So that was the closest that they can get to try to make things like interesting.
Oh yeah, got to keep the teenagers who are necking interested. Right. And here's the other thing. Remember, this is the era when you didn't just release this once. You changed the title and released it next year, and you did it the next year, and then the next year, and then the next year, and the kids are, you know, they're drunk, stoned, or making out. They don't even notice. It doesn't matter. You just keep putting it out there.
Making out and stoned.
Seriously.
I was so that's
close. That's why this movie has like 12 titles, because you keep milking it, keep milking that cow for all the money you can get.
You just wanted to say milking that cow.
I know. I was thinking, like, you just want to say cow.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
Any chance he gets to say cow, he's, you know, he'll do it.
Absolutely. I never shut that barn door.
No, you don't.
What, one other thing I did want to point out with regards to the cast, the overly enthusiastic narrator at the beginning. The guy who's pretending to be the vampire, and he's like, I'm a vampire and I'm evil and I will, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? The guy who's doing that is by the name of Brother Theodore. Now, he's not listed in the credits, but that's who is there. Now, Brother Theodore is this weird ass philosopher podiatrist guy that ended up in the 70s and 80s, or well, I guess in the 80s, he was a frequent guest on Late Night with David Letterman, and he would do these really weird rants. So these philosophical rants. So if you go onto YouTube and you look up David, if you look up Theodore Gottlieb, you will find some of his rants there. So that's the guy who did it. This was his thing in the 1970s.
What is a podiatrist?
That's a foot doctor.
That's what I thought. So wait, so are you telling me that a crazy philosophical foot doctor
Theodore.
Many of my victims have joined my unholy legion of the undead, becoming creatures without souls, living only for hideous torment.
So probably suck on toes too, not just necks.
Oh, there you go. Maybe if he's in the feet like that.
Now, I watched a few Letterman back in the day, but I honestly don't remember seeing him there. So I'm gonna have to go back to YouTube and pull up some old Letterman episodes and see him, because apparently his rants are pretty unhinged and crazy. So
you would say that he is like the equivalent to Criswell or like Ed Wood.
The hippie Criswell.
Yeah. God, what's up with like everybody being the hippie something of this, you know?
Because it's late 60s. That was thing.
It makes total sense. Too, because John Carradine was basically Al Adamson's Bela Lugosi.
Yes,
you know, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah,
I'm surprised that Ed Wood never got John Carradine in one of his movies. You know, like why not? You know,
sure.
What was John doing then? Except for
John couldn't even sink that low.
Oh, well, come no! I mean, Al Adamson, I think, like from this movie, I think that's lower than.
Oh,
I
dude! As bad as this movie is, you have not seen. There are worse movies by Al Adamson. Believe it or not.
This just seemed like I had some stuff lying around. I don't know what to do with it. We're gonna mix it all together, and it's gonna be fun. It's fine.
That's why this is the movie. Leftovers.
You know what you want for dinner? You just mix them all up. You know.
This is the movie that I like to show people who don't know about Al Adamson, because it is so bonkers, off the wall, wackadoodle, batshit nuts that it's too stupid to be bored. There's just something stupid happening every 5 seconds. You don't know what's going on next. Nothing makes any sense at all. And, you know, there's fake dinosaurs and midgets and vampires and like everything.
I feel like it was a really good Mystery Science 3000 movie. Like, I could just see that being on there if they haven't done That was my commentary through the whole thing, as I felt like I was like, you know, Crow and stuff sitting down there going, yep, they shouldn't do that. What is that?
Absolutely. This, hey, if I had anything to do with it, I would have tormented them with this movie from season one if I could have. Wow. So what did you think, Jonathan? Is this something you'd show other folks?
No. I mean, I would watch it if it were part of one of our group things or something, but I wouldn't, this is not something it's not even something I'd watch again unless it was like something we had to review again. You know, this is not, you know, and we'll get to it because we're about to do our reviews portion. So I'll kind of tell my part of that, you know, or whatever. Well, no, I mean, when we do that, so. I guess we're here. We're at the review portion. Mm-hmm. So, Paul, explain to everybody, the viewers at home, what, and listeners at home, what basically the review is.
Okay, so we have a stinkometer here at Indie Film Cafe, because of course we do, by which all of our co-hosts and reviewers rate the film from 1 to 10, where 1 is not stinky at all. It's actually a pretty good film. 5 is kind of in between. There's definitely some stink, but it's not too bad. Could be much worse. All the way up to 10, which is a big whole wheelbarrow full of stinky, crappy gunk. And you could actually, if you felt like one of the scores you wanted to be a little more subtle with it, you could go with, say, a 5.5 or a 6.5, something like that. And then once we have 3 scores, we total it up and we get the total stink score and the stink average. And at the end of the season, we figure out which movie was the stinkiest movie of the year. And boy, this season we've had some serious stink here. And I'm not going to lie, it's as bad as this was. I'm not sure this is going to be up there with them, but we'll find out. We will definitely find out. So So you are bursting at the seams, Jonathan.
I'll begin it, I guess, because usually we sometimes let our guests go, but only if we've had the guest on for, you know, a few times before. And since you have been on before, I'm still gonna go first.
Go first.
I will say that I'm gonna give it a 6. And
really,
yeah, whoa. It's and I've surprised you last year with was it Creeping Terror or whatever, where you thought I was gonna go higher on the stink, and I actually went lower. I went to 8 then. I'm gonna go with 6 on this one because the acting is pretty much what saves the movie, honestly, from everything, because it's done, you know, in a way that it doesn't feel like a normal stinker to me. Like it has moments that's just terrible and god awful, but like the movie is kind
just
of
one.
Yeah, more than one movie that's just terrible and god awful. But it's, to me, it's just was fun, you know, and enjoyable. And sure. it was not as like. Sure, there were some stinky aspects to it, like them having radiation and then apparently being cured when they go up to space, things like that. Like, but it wasn't nearly as bad as like the stuff we've seen. Like, fucking Jolly Roger was more terrible than this movie. Like, this movie just wasn't. It just wasn't that bad. Like, it was. It had moments, in my opinion, that were, you know, that were stinky, but it just, all in all, it was just okay, you know. Like, I was almost going to give it a 5, but I think I went up more because of our conversation. I think it's at 6. Like, that's where I'm going to stay at it. So I guess, Sarah, do you want to go next, or would you?
Yeah,
like
I'll go ahead and go.
Okay.
So I want to just, I don't even know how to rate this movie, because my first reaction when I saw it was 10. It's stinky. 10 is stinky. But, you know, after learning more about how they made it and that it was cut up and it was different movies and stuff, I'm going to go with an 8, because it's not something I would go out of my way to watch. It's not something I would recommend. But what I would do is, if I was having a party where it's like on the TV in the background and everybody is just kind of out of their mind, screwed up anyways, I would put it on just so when they walk by it and see it, I could see them stop and go, what is that? What's happening here? And just totally blow their minds, because most people I hang out with love this old stuff anyways. So I could see this movie being good for that, of putting it on the background at a crazy party and just waiting for people who are, you know, a little stoned or a little drunk to just walk by it and just get immersed with the stinkiness of it. But the acting was good, but it made no sense whatsoever. It was pretty stinky. It was pretty chopped up and it was pretty cheesy, but sometimes they're supposed to be like that, you know? So I'll give it an 8.
Very cool. And I have to say, I'm very similar. I'm also giving it an 8. It's bad in all the production levels and everything you can think of. The acting was decent. The acting is what saves it from a higher score. And you're right, it's a step below Jolly Roger because of that, in my opinion. Right. And just the writing of, again, this is yet another example of where the plot and the screenplay just sinks this movie. And it's just, I can't turn off my brain and just not pay attention to details. Like, right, you know, they say this and then they forget about it. And just, it just can't do it. It's just so bad and stupid and just awful. But I love John Carradine. He's such a crotchety old coot. I like seeing him in pretty much anything. So that always helps as well. And it's got some nice stuff. I really like Leanne, and I kind of liked Willie too. Willie was kind of ridiculous, but yeah, I kind of liked their little tryst there. You know, you generally don't get Willie or Willie's kind of character. The one ends up with the girl.
Right, right. But to everybody's fairness, the only one who didn't end up with the girl was Bob. You know, you know what I mean? Because poor Bob, he gets killed. And on top of that, he doesn't get the girl. Like, he doesn't get a girl. And Willie gets the girl. Freaking the captain gets a girl. The random
doctor didn't get a girl either. But still, yeah. But everybody else, right?
Like, he's too old. The captain. The doctor was the captain of the ship,
yeah,
sort of.
The blonde girl just all of a sudden makes out with the other space guy. I go, oh, okay, I guess there were a couple.
I like to think that they all flew back in their rocket ship and went to the room where the machine was, and they all got themselves hooked up to the machine and had blinky light, weird noise sex.
Right.
Wouldn't that be crazy if they had like a blinky orgy thing going at the end of it, you know? Just all of them just decide to put it all on and see what happens.
By the way, did you guys notice that anytime the astronauts, quote unquote, were off the ship and were running around in the Filipino caveman movie, there was weird noises going on? Like there was bloop, 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 bloop. Like every 30 seconds, it would just kind of like go on. It went through that the entire film, and I have no idea what that's supposed to be.
I don't know either.
No idea. It's a movie that if you watch it 3 or 4 times, you're going to pick out new weird shit that you didn't notice before. That's why I love it. This movie is the gift that keeps on giving. So it's bad, but it's got a few interesting good points too. So an 8 for me.
All right. So there you go. So 8, 8, and 6. So I think that's fair. You know, I mean, everybody has their own reasons, you know. I think literally we all agree that the acting was the best part about it. Like from the acting from the normal people or whatever, the space people or whatever, like space. Those, you know, even the girl, I liked her. Like I like Leanna, you know, I thought she saved a lot of it because like, honestly, had she been terrible or not that interesting, this movie would have, I just would not have cared, you know.
Sure. And the thing is that her character is, if for this film, is pivotal, because not only does she have to keep our interest, she's got to somehow connect the stuff that they shoot in the 60s with the Filipino caveman movie from 1956. Even if they don't look alike, she's the person who's got to give the exposition to make some kind of sense as to what's going on. So her character is critical, and she does a pretty good job with it. You know what I mean? She doesn't make it boring, and you kind of care for her. I mean, I did, you know?
Right. No, I agree, because like, yeah, you have to care for her. They have to connect the story. And on top of that, she has to make everything make sense, you know, which thank you, Jennifer Bishop. You are actually wonderful. Like you, I want to watch more of her stuff, you know, now, because I think she did a wonderful job. And that makes me want to watch that Mako Jaws of Death movie, because that just sounds amazing.
The Maltese Bippy. We got to check that one out.
Maltese. She was in that too.
The Maltese Bippy.
Okay. You have to check that out.
I don't know how that one escaped my notice, but it will not go unavenged. That's for sure. All right. So, Miss Sarah, what did you think of this movie compared to It Waits?
I mean, that one was very confusing as well. I mean, considering they're both shot in two different times, they kind of have two different, just complete like feelings there. But I think It Waits was maybe a better movie, even though it had its own flaws. But for what this was, the time period, all the time periods it was, all the things it was, like, it wasn't horrible, though. Like, they're pretty close together and just kind of, like, stank. But, you know, couldn't really choose the other. I'd put them both on in the background and just let people go, what?
It Waits has its own set of problems, but it's you know, story-wise, it's a lot more straightforward.
Yes,
it's a lot more A to B to C to D. Right. This movie is more like, you ever see the old Family Circus cartoon or you know, comic in the newspaper, where little Billy is supposed to get something, and instead of going from here to there, he goes to like 55,000 other places before he finally gets to where he's going? That's this movie. This movie wanders all over the place aimlessly to finally get to where it gets to at the end. It's just so weird.
I agree.
Exactly. So that was just perfect. I just, that was the best way to end it, you know, talking about everything. So thank you, Paul, for picking this. And thank you, Sarah. You were, like, honestly, we need to have you come on more so you can explain the movie.
Yay.
You know, right? And stuff
thank,
like
it. Thank you for making me sit through that.
I'm glad we didn't scare you away. This one is a pretty bad movie.
And I was very surprised because, like, I was expecting a newer movie from you, Paul, and you did pick, like, something from the 70s was, I mean, pretty cool. So I dug that.
When I heard 70s, though, I was expecting cheese.
Yeah. There you go. Oh yeah. I mean, I've got movies coming out my ears from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. So it's time, because the last couple we've been doing more recent stuff, Dark Wolf and such. And I was like, yeah, time to get in the Wayback Machine and see what kind of crapola I can scoop out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was great. So thank you once again, Sarah. What so you and I have horror film lovers, which we got to record a new episode, I think, next month sometime. I think we had something on the docket at some point next month. So we will have that coming out. Have you been a part of any other podcasts or doing anything else yourself?
Not yet. I'm on the second floor of a house where there's another podcast going on below me, which I will try to get you the hookup information for that. And that was Warlord Radio, which they're big horror and music buffs as well. So I think cool. That'd be a good connection for y'all. So I'll try to get maybe them on your show and you on their show.
That would be awesome. Yeah, we love more people who are into horror that can, you know, that we can kind of team up with, you know,
right, or whatever. The main guy for that, he does horror movies as well. He's a director. He just put a few things out. He goes to the cult classic convention that Lydia is going to be at, which is one of your actresses. So
yeah,
it's going to be a good connection. So
are you going to be there?
I am going to do my best to be there, and I think I am.
All right, awesome. So people, if you want to meet Sarah, you know, she's planning to be there, so she might run into you at the cult classic convention.
Yes, over and over and over again.
Yeah, we got to get you guys some pamphlets or something to hand out and shit, right, you know, definitely. Stuff.
Some flyers or something. Some
flyers, yeah. I mean, we got so much stuff going on. We would love to, you know, have you guys pimping our shit out, you know, while we can't be there because, you know, we're here in Virginia and you're
because we're doing 10,000 podcasts, which I think you mentioned earlier on. Like, I don't know which podcast. There's so many.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's better than doing none, right?
This is true.
But I was actually thinking about it today. I was like, because all the film stuff is coming up right now. So I was like, if I have to, like, not do any podcasts, you know, or whatever, if I had to pick and choose podcasts or film stuff, probably be picking film stuff, you know, over the podcast, which would mean that maybe at some point I may have to just stick to Indie Film Cafe as like the primary podcast and everything else will take a back burner after a while. But for now, since I don't have that luxury or whatever, you know, I have to do this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we're doing what we can with the time we've got. You know, I still do the Sexploitation Sleaze cast, and then I did the video one, the Blue Cheese, which you and I just did. And plus, we have all kinds of other stuff that we're currently working on and some other old favorites that we want to bring back and sort of cycle things into. So there's a lot going on. So Sarah, if you are interested, we have all kinds of different shows, all kinds of different subjects. If you'd like to be on any one of our shows, please let us know. We'd love to work in.
You'll have to send me a list of everything that's available, and I'll look it over for you. I'm free most of the time.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's great.
And we can send you the link if you don't have the film. So
there you go.
Well, that's what we've been doing pretty much because everything's sort of been through Zoom. Our most things.
Wonderful world of Zoom.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the easiest way right now with COVID and everything that's going on. And so thank you, Zoom, and thank you, Paul, for suggesting Zoom. I keep saying that, but like literally it was the best suggestion that he ever made that helped us last year, you know, like, because if not, I wouldn't have created all these other podcasts that we have because
I've created a monster.
I know you have.
A Frankenstein monster like this movie.
And when we're in other states, it's kind of hard to get together. So this works.
Exactly. Well,
hopefully you'll be coming out to Virginia at some point and doing some work with us. And if that happens, we'll put you in the studio and you can do a live podcast, Stinky Movie Podcast with us. That'd be awesome.
There we go.
I would love that. If we have time for any of those things, like I'm hoping we can do something like that. That'd
pizza
be fun.
And cheesy movies. Who doesn't want that?
Right.
Well, I mean, we'll see, you know, we'll see if we can do that. That'd be awesome. But thank you guys so much. This was a wonderful show. Please stick around right after the ending. But everybody else, thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed it.
It's time for us to do the countdown to us leaving. So 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. Jesus Christ already. Just go. Why does it have to be a stupid countdown for everything? So stupid. Just press the button.
I don't know. Well, I'm about to press the button. So thank you guys. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.